Bright clouds drift through a blue sky above a tall mountain peak. Titles appear. Paramount proudly presents the first picture in VistaVision, a Paramount picture, Irving Berlin's White Christmas. Copyright 1954, Paramount Pictures Corporation, all rights reserved. More titles, starring Bing Crosby as Bob, Danny Kaye as Phil, Rosemary Clooney as Betty, and Vera Ellen as Judy, with Dean Jagger, Mary Wicks, John Brasia, and Anne Whitfield. Written for the screen by Norman Krasna, Norman Panama, and Melvin Frank. Lyrics and music by Irving Berlin. Music direction and vocal arrangements by Joseph L. Lilly. Orchestral arrangements by Van Cleve. Music associate Troy Sanders. Dances and musical numbers staged by Robert Alton. Color by Technicolor. Director of Photography, Loyal Griggs, ASC. Technicolor Consultant, Richard Mueller. Art direction by Hal Pereira and Roland Anderson. Edited by Frank Brock, ACE. Special photographic effects, John P. Fulton, ASC. Process photography, Farcio Edouard, ASC. Set decoration, Sam Comer and Grace Gregory. Costumes by Edith Head. Makeup supervision by Wally Westmore. Assistant director, John Coonan. Sound recordings by Hugo Grenzbach and John Cope. Produced by Robert Emmett Dolan. Directed by Michael Curtiz. Now, a painting of a snowy country village is the backdrop for a makeshift stage. A caption reads, Christmas Eve, 1944. Two thin men, Bob Wallace and Phil Davis, strut into view. Wearing red Santa Claus jackets and hats, they take turns shuffling in a soft shoe dance. Our view pulls back to reveal the crumbling walls of a bombed-out building and 100 or more soldiers in combat uniforms watching the show. On the right side of the stage, two soldiers play piano and drums. Others sit on the flatbed of a transport truck and blow horns. On a dirt road beyond, a jeep pulls up.
Help with you, Sergeant.
What's this all about, Captain?
A little entertainment for the men, sir. Tonight's Christmas Eve.
These men are moving up tonight, General Waverly. They should be lined up for full inspection.
You're absolutely right. There's no Christmas in the Army, Captain.
Yes, sir.
There's always a slip-up or two during a change in command. The men get a little loose. I know I'm leaving them in good hands.
Thank you, General. Sergeant, take me to headquarters immediately.
We'll have those men turned out on the double.
Sergeant, take the shortcut.
Yes, sir.
The captain climbs out, followed by the kind-faced General Waverly, who carries a crooked walking stick. The sergeant drives the second general away.
That's not the way back to headquarters.
Joe, you know that, and I know that, but the general doesn't know it. At least he won't for about an hour and a half.
That sergeant will be a private in the morning.
Yes, isn't he lucky?
As the two men approach the back of the audience, a bomb flashes in the distance. A number of seated soldiers spot General Waverly and stand. Unnoticed by the performers, he gestures for the men to relax, then sits down among them. On stage, Davis sits by a large wooden music box. Wallace stands dead center, his thumbs hooked into his belt.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Wallace glances at Davis, who turns a crank on the music box.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white.
In the audience, soldiers with melancholy faces stare at the ground.
Well, that just about wraps it up, fellas. Certainly too bad General Waverly couldn't have been here for this little Yuletide clam bake, but... because we really had a slam-bang finish cooked up for him. Guess you know by now that he's being replaced by a new commanding general fresh out of the Pentagon. That's not a very nice Christmas present, is it, for a division like us that's moving up? The old man's moving toward the rear. That's a direction he's never taken in his entire life. Well, all I can say is, we owe an awful lot to General Waverly.
Waverly stands.
And to the way...
Attention!
All the men in the audience spring to their feet. Wallace and Davis stand stiffly at attention. Waverly approaches the stage.
Captain Wallace, who's responsible for holding a show in this advanced area?
Well, sir, as a matter of fact...
It was me, sir.
Davis steps forward.
It was my idea, sir. I mean, when you've got an entertainer, sir, of the caliber of Captain Wallace, sir. I mean, sir, it's Christmas Eve, sir, and... Well, sir, I mean that if you were in New York, sir, you'd have to pay $6.60 or even $8.80 to see hear a great singer like Captain Wallace, sir.
I'm well aware of Captain Wallace's capabilities. Who are you?
Philip Davis, a private first class, sir.
Well, at ease, Davis.
Yes, sir.
Davis stands straight and proud.
I said at ease.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Waverly steps up on the stage.
This division is now under the command of General Harold G. Carlton. I don't want you to forget it. Not that he'll let you. He's tough, just what this sloppy outfit needs. He'll have you standing inspection night and day. You may even learn how to march. And if you don't give him everything you've got, I may come back and fight for the enemy. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Well, I guess all I can say is how much I... What a fine outfit. How am I going to...
Waverly scans his troops with sad eyes, then turns to Wallace.
Don't just stand there. How do I get off?
Just happen to have a slam-bang finish, sir.
Yes, sir.
The soldiers form two lines and shake hands with Waverly as he walks through.
We'll follow the old man wherever he wants to go. Long as he wants to go.
As bombs flash in the distant, dark sky, all the men duck and look up warily. They stand again, and Waverly continues to shake hands.
Because we love him, we love him, and especially when he keeps us on the ball.
As Waverly reaches the back of the jury-rigged theater, he gives a crisp salute, then turns away. Faltering on the rubble beneath his feet, he leans on his walking stick, and the captain helps him into a waiting jeep. A soldier drives them past another ruined building, out of sight. More bombs flash on the horizon. The men crouch. Dirt and debris rain down on their helmets. Now, Davis follows Wallace, who runs through the ranks, waving for the men to scatter. Wallace pauses beside a teetering brick wall and points to areas of safe cover.
Right through there!
The 20-foot wall cracks and starts to fall forward. Davis grabs Wallace, throws him under a nearby truck, then leans against it, panting. Suddenly, a heavy cloud of timbers falls on him. Davis shields his head with his arms and crawls under the truck.
You all right, Davis?
Yeah, I'm... All right, sir, it's just my arm,
what
sir.
What do you got? Looks pretty bad.
Nah, it's nothing but a scratch.
Wallace wraps the gash in Davis's right arm with a bandana. Later, he visits him in the infirmary.
Hey, Davis, how you feeling?
Oh, pretty good, Captain.
I just dropped by to thank you for saving my life.
Well, it was a life worth saving, sir.
Well, I appreciate it, and I want you to know something, Davis. Anytime I can do anything for you, anytime, any place, you just pick up a phone, huh?
Oh, thank you, sir.
So long, Davis.
He pats his arm.
I'm sorry.
That's all right, Captain.
I'll see you.
Captain?
Huh?
You could do one little tiny favor for me.
What's that?
Well, sir, I've kind of written a little song, you see, and I thought perhaps when we got back to the States, when this is all over, you know, I thought maybe if you put this song in your act, it might be a big hit for you.
Well, sure. Just pick up the phone.
Yeah. Captain, I just happen to have it with me right here.
That's it?
Yeah.
Well, it's for two people. It's a duet.
Yeah, it needs two people, two dynamite entertainers.
But I work alone. I do a single. Who do you figure on for the other hunk of dynamite?
Well, I happen to know a fellow, Captain. He's pretty funny in living rooms, kind of has a fair voice, you know, and I... how about me?
Well, I do a single, you see.
Yeah, well, that's all right, Captain. I wouldn't want you to feel any special obligation in any way.
Davis holds his arm.
Oh, well. Okay, Dynamite, we'll give it a whirl, huh?
Okay, Captain.
Good luck.
Bye.
Wallace leaves, shooting a dubious frown at the back of Davis's head. Now, a newspaper headline shouts, V.E. Day. Beaming soldiers wave helmets on bayonets. Variety's headline reads, Wallace and Davis to team. The two men dance at a nightclub. Another headline, Wallace and Davis smash biz in better bistros.
They're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. Well, now the temperature's rising, it isn't surprising. They certainly can.
Now, the younger red-haired Davis tap dances around his partner. Another headline reads, Wallace and Davis top radio network poll.
Let me sing a funny song with crazy words that roll along. And if my song can start you laughing, I'm happy.
They sing in a radio studio. At a theater, a stage manager reads a Variety headline, which asks, Wallace and Davis to produce? He shows Wallace, who frowns reproachfully at his partner. Davis shrugs and points to the wounded spot on his right arm. Later, a billboard reads, Bob Wallace and Phil Davis present a new musical review, Playing Around. A billboard outside the Florida Theater announces, Playing Around, original New York cast, 2 years on Broadway, December 10th, 11th, and 12th. Wearing matching maroon jackets and boater hats, they sway and tuck wooden canes under their arms.
Bluebirds all day long. I never saw the sunshine so bright, never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by when you're in love, my heart, they fly. Oh, blue days, all of them gone, long gone. Nothing but blue skies from now on.
Backstage, Bob chats with a stage manager. Phil visits two showgirls in sequined bodysuits.
Phil,
yeah.
Can I see you for a minute?
Hello, honey. Hi.
You know Doris.
Yeah?
Hi.
Oh, fine.
On stage, girls. On stage, finale.
Albert, you get the notice drawn up?
Oh, yes, sir.
Good boy.
Show lays off tonight. Cast and crew get 10 days off with pay. Gee, they'll go wild. Nicest Christmas present anybody ever had.
Well, they deserve it. You got the tickets for New York?
No, a little rough for the holiday traffic, but I pulled a few strings. Got you and Mr. Davis on the 1 o'clock train. Tickets on the way over.
Good enough. Put that on the bulletin board.
Sign this, Bob.
Okay, sir. If you want us for anything in New York, we'll be at Radio City. We'll be rehearsing there for the Ed Harrison television show.
Too bad you and Mr. Davis couldn't get a little rest.
Oh, man, I wasn't about to turn this down. This is a great big fat plug for the show.
Yo.
Bring the tickets when they come.
Yes.
Heaven, the light of my life.
Oh, Bob. Can I see you a minute? You know Doris, friend of Rita's.
Another one, huh? How do you do?
Mutual, I'm sure.
I thought before train time we'd get a bite to eat and have a few laughs or something.
No, I can't make it. I'm afraid you can't either. We got some business to take care of.
What kind of business?
We gotta go look at an act.
Look at an act?
Some other time, I hope, huh?
Well, I like that. Without so much as a kiss my foot or have an apple.
Well, that does it. That's the last time I'm gonna dig up a date for him, and from now on you can do your dirty work yourself.
Excuse me one minute, would you, kid?
He follows Bob into a dressing room.
Wallace, I think it's time you and I have a little talk.
Yeah, it's a good idea, Buster. And if you don't mind, I'll lead off.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
You wait a minute. You know something? For about 3 months now, you've been clumsily trying to entangle me with some female.
All I'm trying to do, Bob...
Fat ones, tall ones, thin ones, doesn't make any difference. As long as they're wearing skirts, little mascara, and still breathing, you ran them at me.
Oh, believe me, it's for your own good.
For my own good?
Yeah, let's face it, Bob. You're a lonely, miserable man.
What?
And you're unhappy, too. And when you're unhappy, I'm unhappy. After all, I feel a strong sense of responsibility to you, Bob. Ever since the day
Oh, no, not again with that life-saving bit.
Well, if you'd rather forget it.
How can I? You won't let me. Since you saved my life, you decided you had the right to run it. You've utched me along every step of the way. You've hammered, drove, pushed, shoved. And if that wasn't enough, you'd look at me with those great big cow eyes of yours, point at that phony arm, and I'd melt and go along.
Well, I don't expect any gratitude.
Well, you're going to get it. We did great, and I'm grateful. So thank you. Thank you, Phil Davis, from the bottom of my heart. Now, will you let the rest of my life alone?
No, I won't.
Well, why not?
Because you're a miserable, lonely, unhappy man.
Oh, you're wacky. I'm a very happy man.
Well, then you're happy for the wrong reasons, and that's the same as being lonely and miserable, except it's worse.
You know something? You're off your nut about a mile and a half. I got everything in life I want.
Oh, sure. I'm off my nut a mile and a half.
At least.
You've got everything you
want,
except
loaded.
The most important thing.
What's this?
A girl.
They change out of their costumes as they talk.
I'll get around to that one of these days.
My dear partner, when what's left of you gets around to what's left to be gotten won't be worth getting whatever it is you've got left.
I figure out what that means. I'll come up with a crushing reply. What's back all this anyway?
Nothing. Only your happiness.
My happiness?
Yeah.
You know, when you get an idea that's for my soul and ultimate happiness, there's always lurking behind it somewhere a little angle for you. Now, what is it?
You really want to know?
Yes, I really want to know.
All right, I'll really tell you.
Well, then lay it on me, will you?
Ever since the day we became producers, you were a changed man. You've gone absolutely berserk with work. And the strange thing is, you liked it. You liked being Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Well, it was your idea, you know.
Well, sure, it was my idea, but I didn't think I was going to create a Frankenstein. From that day on, I haven't had 1 minute I could call my own.
What do you want me to do about it?
I want you to get married. I want you to have 9 children. And if you only spend 5 minutes a day with each kid, that's 45 minutes. And I'd at least have time to go out and get a massage or something.
You don't expect me to get serious with the kind of characters you and Reed have been throwing at me.
Well, there have been some nice girls, too, you know.
Oh, yeah, like that nuclear scientist we just met out in the hall.
Bob sits to put on his shoes.
All right, they didn't go to college. They didn't go to Smith.
Go to Smith? She couldn't even spell it.
Oh, that's very funny. Oh, the crooner is now becoming the comic.
Bob looks at the floor and sighs.
Phil, let me tell you something. There's a lot of sense in what you say, and I have to admit it, but the kind of girls you and I meet in this business, they're young and they're ambitious, they're full of their own careers. They're not interested in getting married, settling down, raising a family.
That's funny, Bob. I never heard you open up like that before.
Someday the right girl's going to come along, and if she'll have me, we'll get married, we'll settle down, we'll start having those 9 kids for you. 45 minutes going to be enough?
If I need any more, I'll tell you.
Come in.
The stage manager.
Your railroad ticket, sir. Drawing room 8, car 207.
Oh, thanks. Now, grab those, will you, Phil?
Here.
We'll go right over to the station from Novella's after we audition this act.
Yeah, what kind of an act is it?
It's a sister act.
We don't need any sister act. What are we wasting time for?
Well, I got a letter from Benny Haynes. They're his sisters. You remember Benny Haynes, the old mess sergeant?
Freckle-faced Haynes, the dog-faced boy?
That's the kid, yeah.
He's got sisters?
Claims he's got them.
Oh, come on now. How can a guy that ugly have the nerve to have sisters?
Very brave parent, thank you.
Bob, will you do me one favor?
What's this?
Give me one reason, one good reason why we should spend our last 2 hours in Florida looking at the sisters of Freckle-faced Haynes, the dog-faced boy.
Let's just say we're doing it for a pal in the Army, huh?
Well, it's not good, but it's a reason.
They both grin. Later, palm trees rise above the walls of a roofless dinner club. An orchestra plays on a small stage while couples dance among the tables.
Hey, Novello. Oh,
good evening, Mr. Wallace.
Mr. Davis.
Hi.
Say, the Haynes sisters been on yet?
No, sir, not yet. They'll be on in about 15 minutes.
Tell them we're here, will you?
Certainly, Mr. Wallace. Luigi, show these gentlemen to their table.
The maitre d' leads them to a table just off the main dance floor.
This is ridiculous. We could have been out with Doris and Rita having some laughs.
Oh, Phil, when are you going to learn that girls like that are a dime a dozen?
Please, don't quote me the price when I haven't got the time.
Now, outside a dressing room.
Who is it?
It's me, Novello.
Inside, 2 blonde sisters greet him.
Bob Wallace and Phil Davis are out front to catch your act.
Wallace and Davis?
Yeah, they got a letter from your brother. He asked them to take a look and give you some advice. Come on now, you better hurry.
Novello leaves.
Isn't that fabulous? Wallace and Davis here to see us.
Yeah, fabulous.
Who'd have thought that of Benny, huh? What a brother. What a sweet, wonderful guy, huh?
Amazing. I wonder whatever gave him the idea.
Well, he probably knew we were here, you know, and that they were in town with a big show. He probably figured we were too shy to take advantage of an old Army friendship to call him or anything.
Judy, did you read Mother's letter this morning?
No. Why?
Benny's got a job in Alaska. He's been out of the country for 3 months.
Oh?
Oh, well, he could have written from Alaska.
But he didn't, did he?
Oh,
We might have.
Judy, why did you write the letter?
Because it's good business. You can't leave everything up to fate. Just like honesty needs a little plus, fate needs a little push.
Judy, next time will you talk to me first before you push us and plus us right out of show business?
You needn't sound so patronizing. You sound just like a mother hen looking after a little chick.
Well, little chick needs plenty of looking after. Until someone else comes along who can do it better, mother hen's going to stick pretty close to the coop.
All right, girls, 5 minutes.
Oh, thank you. Oh, honey, you look beautiful tonight. He'll be crazy about you.
Which one?
What does it matter? They're both famous.
Now in the dinner club.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Haynes sisters.
Betty and Judy stand close together in front of the stage. Wearing full-skirted robin's egg blue dresses, they cover their faces with large fans made from fluffy feathers of the same color. Lowering them, they smile.
Can you imagine Freckleface having sisters as cute as that?
It's incredible.
Sisters, sisters, there were never such devoted sisters. Never had to have a chaperone, no sir. I'm here to keep my eye on her. Caring, sharing, every little thing that we are wearing. When a certain gentleman arrived from Rome, she wore the dress and I stayed home. All kinds of weather, we stick together, the same in the rain or sun. Two different faces, but in tight places, we think and we act as one. Those who've seen us know that not a thing could come between us. Many men have tried to split us up, but no one can.
Closing and opening their fans, they spin and stop.
Lord help the mister who comes between me and my sister. And Lord help the sister who comes between me and my man.
As they swirl, kick, and snap the fans closed, Bob watches transfixed. Phil perks up at his partner's interest. Now Judy faces them, flirtatiously blinking her dark brown eyes. She wears her hair in an ash blonde ponytail and has an exceedingly thin waist.
Hey, how about those big brown eyes?
Oh, they're blue.
Betty has blue eyes.
Brown.
Ah, blue.
Bob stares at Betty's loose wavy hair and bright smile.
Oh, yeah. Deep blue.
As the sisters exit, Phil's calculating gaze shifts from Bob to Betty. Later, Betty and Judy wear evening dresses and cross to Bob and Phil's table.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Want to sit down?
Thank you.
Won't you sit there and you sit right here. There, that's cozier, isn't it? Boy, girl.
Well, I'm Betty and this is my sister Judy.
And you're Phil Davis and you're Mr. Wallace.
You're guilty on both counts, I guess. Isn't this nice? Mr. Wallace was just saying how remarkable it was that Benny Haynes' sister should have eyes. I mean, blue eyes. That is, eyes...
Nice out. That's quite an act you kids have there. It's a funny thing Benny never told us there's so much talent in the family, huh?
Well, to be perfectly honest,
Benny didn't want to take advantage of an old army friendship. You know how shy he is.
Yeah,
so modest and retiring.
It's a family characteristic.
I have a recent snapshot here.
Oh?
A photo of a goofy, cross-eyed young man. Bob forces a weak smile.
He always was a good-looking kid.
Phil cringes.
Speaking of families, I read an article just the other day about citrus fruit and its effect on children's teeth.
Bob shoots him a threatening glare.
Are you interested in families or children or things like that, Miss Haynes?
Yes, I suppose so.
Oh, next, man.
Isn't that amazing? Imagine a girl in show business today wanting to settle down and raising a family. It's so refreshing, isn't it?
Pushing.
Well, would you like a cigarette?
No, thank you. I, for one, would like a little free advice. Mr. Wallace, do you have any suggestions for the act?
Oh, no, just keep plugging away, huh?
Oh, but there must be something. Should we both be blondes? Maybe Betty's hair should go a shade darker, or... Should she maybe change the style? A little more off the face.
He studies Betty with an admiring smile.
Oh, no, I wouldn't change a thing.
But would you care to dance?
Well, don't you think we should discuss...
Let's say it with music, huh?
All right. Now, promise you won't say anything important till I get back, huh? Bye now.
Judy and Phil dance away cheek to cheek. Betty and Bob inch closer to each other as they talk.
They look well together, don't they?
Yes.
See, I was sure surprised to get Benny's letter today. I didn't know
Look, Mr. Wallace, before you go any further, I must tell you. You were brought here tonight under false pretenses. Benny didn't write the letter. My sister did.
Judy?
Yes, she figured you'd never come to see us if we asked you, and you might if Benny did. It's as simple as that.
I didn't like that. Even little Judy there's got an angle going, huh?
She didn't mean anything by it. She's
just...
You don't
have to apologize. Everybody's got an angle.
That's a pretty cynical point of view.
Oh, come now, Miss Haynes. Surely you knew that everybody's got a little larceny operating in them. Didn't you know that?
Well, just for the record, I want you to know that my sister and I don't play angles.
Well, if that letter wasn't an angle, I'd like to know what it was.
I don't like your whole inference.
I got no squawks, no beefs. The kid played a percentage, it worked, and we're here. Let's not make a whole big mishmash out of it, huh?
Phil and Judy peek through the crowd at them.
See, they're getting along just fine.
And so quickly, too.
Isn't that nice?
All I'm saying is, when you've been around show business as long as I have, you just get used to people working angles, that's all.
Mr. Wallace, since the chance of our seeing each other again is extremely remote, I don't think it's important for us to go on arguing.
Well, I'll drink to that.
Be my guest.
They clink their glasses together and smile.
Hey, if this keeps up, we'll practically be in-laws before the dance is over.
Well, I don't mind if you don't.
And it's too bad we're leaving town tonight.
Oh, that is a shame. But we're leaving tomorrow anyway.
Where are you going?
Vermont. We booked for the holidays.
Vermont, huh?
Well, Vermont should be beautiful this time of the year. With all that snow.
Yeah. You know something?
What?
Vermont should be beautiful this time of year. All that snow.
That's what I just said.
We seem to be getting a little mixed up.
Maybe it's the music.
Maybe it isn't only the music.
They gaze dreamily at each other, then pass several smiling couples at linen-draped tables. Phil spins Judy and pulls her outside through a pair of open doors. They prance up a staircase to a raised patio overlooking a lighthouse.
The best things happen while you're dancing. Things that you would not do at home come naturally on the floor. For dancing soon becomes romancing when you hold a girl in your arms that you've never held before. Even guys with two left feet come out all right if the girl is sweet. If by chance their cheeks should meet while dancing, proving that the best things happen while you dance.
As Judy spins and descends the steps with Phil, her skirt ripples. They tiptoe alongside a lagoon, twirling and kicking.
The best things happen while you're dancing.
Phil takes Judy by the waist, and with a smooth, relaxed style, they step gracefully away from the water. They hop on their toes, back up, and hunch. Phil enfolds her in a huddled embrace, then spins her out and joins her in a stylized flamenco tap dance.
Even guys with two left feet, come on.
Judy spins onto a pier and swings around a pole fixed to one side. Phil leaps to the pole and wheels over the water. Judy smiles at him, then runs to another pole. Phil follows and whirls around it. She falls gracefully back into Phil's arms, then spins up and leads him onto the hull of an upturned boat. They clap and tap like flamenco dancers. Standing tall like a toreador, Phil holds his lapels and dances around his partner. Judy gives him a sidelong smile as she swishes her skirt. They spin in place, arching their arms over their heads. Phil holds onto Judy's slender waist as she wiggles her hips and swishes her skirt. They separate and face each other.
Oh,
Phil hops back onto the pier and swings Judy down beside him. Together, they grab a trolley bar hanging from a suspended track. They glide across the pier, then dance back onto the club's terrace. They join and whirl in a tight circle. Phil takes Judy's arm and spins her around. She steps away. Phil grabs her hand, and Judy winds in and out of his arms like a yo-yo. Phil kneels. Judy falls backward across his waiting arms. Betty walks out from the club and stares at the intertwined couple.
What is this, the best 2 out of 3?
I guess I got carried away.
Yeah, she carried me right with her. I don't weigh very much.
We better change for the last number.
I'll see you after the show.
The sheriff's here. He's in my office with a warrant to arrest both of you.
The sheriff?
What's up? What's the trouble?
Oh, the landlord claims we burned a hole in the rug and he's trying to hold us up for $200.
Oh, no, not that old rug routine.
And on top of that, we sneaked our bags out of our room.
Oh, well, where are they?
In our dressing room.
Dressing room. Look, I'll tell you what. You girls go and pack. Bob and I'll take care of this.
No. We don't want to cause you any trouble.
It's no trouble, honey.
I know, but Mr. Wallace already...
Will you stop worrying about Mr. Wallace? We like to take care of our friends.
We're practically strangers.
Well, we'd like to take care of that, too.
Well, but you might get yourself in an awful jam. Why should you? I mean, what's in it for you?
45 minutes, all to myself. Now, go on, would you hurry, girls? Come on. Look, you go back to the office and stall the sheriff.
But, Mr. Davis, how will I stall?
Oh, make up a story. Tell him anything. Tell him the girls have to finish the show or something.
Novello frowns. Phil rushes back to the table.
Bob. Hey, Bob, the girls are in a jam. We'll have to help them.
What's the beat?
Well, come on, some
wait,
guy.
How do
they're
I get
in big
what's
trouble
the
now.
Here?
I don't need us trying to get
the... I'll wait.
Come on.
Phil ushers him backstage.
Let me ask you something. Why don't we pay the fella the $200?
Are you kidding? Pay off a chiseling rat like that? Bob, will you send a cab out back and I'll meet you in the dressing room?
I don't know how I get mixed up in these things. Why do I listen to you? Give me one good reason.
Let's just say we're doing it for an old pal in the Army.
Well, it's not good, but it's a reason.
Will you go on?
Now, in the girls' dressing room.
You kids get down to the station. Hop on a train.
Here, Phil. We can't. Our tickets aren't good until tomorrow.
Yeah, but you've got to get out tonight. Tickets. Oh, wait a minute. Here. Take these. Now, get going. Come on.
We can't take your tickets. What do Mr. Wallace think?
Well, honey, it was his idea. Now, would he please get going?
His idea?
Yeah.
Are you sure he won't think it's some kind of an angle?
I told you it was his idea. Now, come on, ups the daisy. Here we go. Up.
He helps them out the window.
Right. We'll pay you back. Oh, well, where can we reach you?
Oh, don't worry. We'll be in touch. Come on.
Oh, our trunks, our phonograph, and the recording.
Honey, we'll get them to you. Now, would you please go? The taxi is coming. Don't
bye,
stop
Phil.
For anything. Bye.
Here.
A taxi drives up, and they climb in.
Open the door. Bye.
Phil studies one of the girls' record albums, then bites his lip as inspiration hits, now in the hallway.
I can't stall them much longer.
Hey, whatever happened to pay the $200?
Well, we've got to give the girls 5 or 10 minutes start. Wait a minute, I've got an idea. Look, if you could just stall them just a few minutes.
Well, I'll try, but he's eating me out of business already.
We'll keep punching, will you? Come on, Bob, I think this will work.
Well, I got a feeling I'm not going to like it.
I got a feeling you're going to hate it.
Well, what am I doing it for?
Let's just say
we're doing it for a pal in the Army, yeah.
Novello's office.
Listen, Sheriff, I haven't got all night to wait here while you eat free food. You've got your warrant. Now arrest those girls.
Now, we agreed to let them finish their show first.
I didn't agree. It was his idea.
Well, I got some rights, too. You don't get those girls till after they've done their number.
Where? How long is it going to take?
Well, it'll only be... Wait a minute. There's our music.
The sheriff sits eating at Novello's desk.
How's your coffee holding up?
No, warm it up a little.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, an impromptu surprise for you.
Backstage, a man plays a record.
The Haynes Sisters.
On stage, two robin's egg blue feathered fans close up, revealing Bob and Phil. They lip sync to the record.
Sisters, sisters. There were never such devoted sisters.
Phil mouths Judy's part while Bob plays Betty. Both men wear their own pants and shirts with the legs and sleeves rolled up. Sequined blue butterflies sparkle on their foreheads.
Sharing every little thing that we are wearing.
They lower the fans, bump hips, and extend their arms in exaggerated feminine poses.
She wore the dress and I stayed home. All kinds of weather, we stick together. The same in the rain or sun.
Bob covers Phil's face with his fan. Phil grimaces.
We think and we act as one. Those who seen us know that not a thing could come between us.
Holding their folded fans before them, they point their toes, mince across the dance floor, and stand side by side.
Lord, help the mister who comes between me and my sister. And Lord, help the sister who comes between me and my man.
As they skip toward us, Phil slaps Bob with his fan.
Sister!
Bob tries to suppress a laugh, but can't.
Sister!
They face each other and chuckle openly.
Sister, don't come between me and my man.
With dainty bows and a flourish of feathers, Bob and Phil exit, then pause backstage.
Hey, we're a smash. Let's take a bow.
You crazy? We'll be taking a bow down at the jailhouse. Come on.
As they bolt, the sheriff sees them.
Hey! Hey, you!
The sheriff!
They run into the dressing room and pile furniture against the door.
Open up!
You've done it again.
It's your fault.
As hat boxes and coat racks tumble, Bob and Phil remove their blue sashes and sparkling bracelets.
Taxi!
Grabbing their suit jackets, they climb out the window onto a pair of silver garbage cans. A taxi pulls up and they scramble into it. Later, they chase a moving train.
Here we go!
A conductor grabs their bags and they jump up from the platform. A second conductor greets them in a passage.
You're getting late just in time.
But it isn't the right car.
You say you have space on this train?
Yeah, show them the tickets, Buster.
Tickets.
The tickets.
Tickets.
Ducats, yes.
Yeah. Hold this just a minute.
What's the matter with you?
No, I'm looking for the tickets.
Get them up.
I'll get them. Railroad tickets.
Well,
I don't seem to have them. Maybe you got them, Bob.
Me? You crazy? I saw you put them in your pocket.
Well, they're gone. I must have left them in my girdle.
Gentlemen, either you have tickets or you haven't tickets.
We've got a drawing room.
Every available space on this train is occupied. However, if you care to purchase tickets, you can sit up all night in the club car.
Well, that's fine. How much are two fares to New York?
Well, let me see. $97.24.
How much more is it to Vermont?
Vermont? We're going to New York.
It must be beautiful this time of year in Vermont, Bob. All that snow.
Two tickets to New York, huh?
How much more to Vermont?
Vermont, who cares? Who's going to Vermont?
We are. I mean, we should. Do us a lot of good, Bob. All that snow and the fir trees and the clean, fresh air and the... great change of pace. Just what we need.
Two tickets to New York, huh?
It's still $97.24, though.
Okay, Buster, get it up. Come on.
I don't seem to have any cash.
What'd you do with that? Leave it in your snood? Here.
$97.24.
Okay.
The conductor gives Bob change. Yeah. Phil grabs it.
Where are you going?
For breakfast.
Breakfast. Get some peanuts.
All right. Make
club car sick. Straight ahead.
Okay.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
I certainly don't get this. We had space in our names. They're not allowed to give it away to somebody else.
Well, with the holiday rush and all that.
As Phil lets a woman pass.
Excuse me.
He bumps the door open. We glimpse Betty and Judy inside. Phil spots them, but hurries Bob away. The sisters peek out, wide-eyed.
Well, this is great. Just great. You pay for our tickets twice, now we've got to sit up all night.
The club car.
What are you screaming about? If we took a plane, we'd be sitting up all night.
We're not taking a plane. We're taking a train.
A train on which we had tickets. Tickets for a drawing room with two nice, warm, soft, comfortable beds where at this very moment two blocks...
Bob gapes, his bright blue eyes framed by slicked back hair.
Oh, no, you wouldn't do this to me.
Wouldn't do what?
After you dress me up like a dame.
You get me involved with the sheriff. I almost lose my life trying to catch a train.
I just know on top of all that, you wouldn't take away my nice, warm bed and let me spend the night out here in a drafty old club car. You wouldn't do this to old Bob, would you?
Whatever are you talking about?
I'm going down there to drawing room A. I'm going to open up that door. And if I find those two Haynes sisters in there, I'm going to take them by the hair. And with these two hands, I am absolutely...
Oh, Mr. Wallace, how can we ever thank you? It was really so sweet and generous of you. Mr. Davis told us you insisted on giving us the tickets, and it was just wonderful of you.
Wasn't there something you wanted to say to the girls?
Huh? Yeah. Won't you have a drink or a sandwich or something?
Hey, let's sit down. Can we have some club sandwiches?
I'd like lemonade. Yeah.
They sit down at a booth, Judy with Phil, Bob with Betty.
Yeah, this is cozy. Boy, girl, girl, boy.
Later, the bartender clears away their dishes.
Tell me, where are you kids going to stay in New York?
We're not staying in New York. We're booked for over the holidays.
Where?
The Columbia Inn, Pine Tree, Vermont.
Bob turns to Phil, who pretends to stare innocently at the ceiling.
Oh, well, that sounds very Vermont-y. Should be beautiful this time of the year in Vermont. All that snow and everything.
Yeah, beautiful.
Fir trees, the clean pine air. Very beautiful, just what we need.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wonderful. Could you come up for a couple of days?
Well, I don't know.
I wish you could. It'd be awfully nice.
Phil gives him a pathetic look and rubs his war-wounded arm. Bob smirks in resignation.
Miss Haynes, if you're ever under a falling building and somebody runs up and offers to pick you up and carry you to safety, don't think, don't pause, don't hesitate a moment. Just spit in his eye.
What did that mean?
It means we're going to Vermont.
Oh, bully!
Might not be bad at that, you know, the snow-covered slopes, the skiing, the Christianas and the stemming and the plotzing and the shushing. Hot buttered rum, light on the butter, and snow.
On the table, a poster shows skiers in Vermont.
Snow, snow,
snow,
snow,
snow.
Bob sings.
It won't be long before we'll all be there with snow.
Now Betty.
Snow, snow. I want to wash my hands, my face and hair with snow.
Phil puts his arm around Judy and sings to her.
Snow, I long to clear a path and lift a spade of snow.
She joins in.
Snow, to see a great big man entirely made of snow.
Snow, where it's snowing all winter through, that's where I want to be.
Snowball throwing, that's what I'll do. How I'm longing to ski
through the snow.
Those glistening houses that seem to be built of snow.
Snow, to see a mountain covered with a quilt of snow. What is Christmas with no snow?
No white Christmas with no,
no
snow.
Snow,
snow.
I'll soon be there with snow. I'll wash my hair with snow.
And with a spade of snow, I'll build a man that's made of snow. I'd love to stay up with you, but I recommend a little shut-eye, go to sleep. And dream of snow.
Snow,
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 snow.
Daytime. A long metallic train speeds past us along a beach lined with palm trees. Later, hardy grass slopes down from the tracks to a row of spindly saplings devoid of leaves. Now in a sleeping car.
Pine tree, coming into Pine Tree.
Hi.
Oh, good morning, Mary. Hi,
sunshine.
How are you?
How'd you sleep?
Oh, like a baby. I always love sleeping on trains.
Yeah? You remember Nanook of the North?
You wound up with the shelf, huh?
Yeah.
Must have lost the toss. Yeah. Let me help you down.
All right.
Let's go visit the fire.
As Bob lifts Betty down from the upper bunk, he stares into her eyes. Judy and Phil spy on them.
Your strategy's a little obvious.
You don't really mind, do you?
But I got a flash for you.
Right.
She's a real slow mover.
Honey, I got a flash right back for you. She's in there with the champ.
Looks like her work's cut out for us.
Well, will you leave it to me? I've got a whole plan worked out.
Shh.
Come on.
In mittens, a fur-collared coat, and a hat with ear flaps, Phil peeks outside.
Hey! Hey, Bob, Betty, Judy, come here. I think we took the wrong train.
What?
Well, it's all green out here.
Well,
how about that?
It's still Carolina.
Outside, the forest floor is brown with dry grass and mud. At the station, they deboard.
Oh, they must have grass-covered igloos up here.
Here, honey.
Can I help you?
Oh, this is warmer than Florida, huh?
Where's the beach?
Could have brought our bathing suits, huh?
All right, honey.
Yeah. Okay. Is this Vermont, New England's winter playground?
Are you sure this is the right Vermont?
Oh, this must be southern Vermont.
I just don't understand it.
Ask a Cisco here.
Where's the snow? This is supposed to be America's snow playground.
Well, we haven't had snow since Thanksgiving. 68 yesterday.
Harper, Columbia, oh. In this way.
That's us. Let's go, yeah.
Well, must be wonderful up in Vermont this time of the year. All that underwear.
Gosh, I hope I can take the electric blanket back.
Where you got that?
Under the underwear.
Oh, you get a nice tan.
I got my oil.
Snow.
It won't be long before we'll all be there with
a little old snowflakes, decimal pie, a couple of vanilla for you, and
They lug their suitcases and coats over to a wood-sided station wagon. Later, the driver takes them over a tiny river bridge and pulls up outside a white two-story house, its gambrel roof lined with gables. To its right, an old barn is labeled Ski Lodge. Inside, a smiling, dark-haired woman in an apron greets them.
Vermont,
be able to do all the shussing and the schlossing.
Ich habe keine Schnur hier, you freaking
Schützengott. Welcome to Columbia Inn. What sort of accommodations would you like? I can offer you a fairly wide choice. Any room in the inn, including mine.
Oh, we're not here as guests. We're the Haines sisters.
Oh.
My friend and I are guests. We came up for the snow. Where are you keeping it?
Well, we take it in during the day. I'm terribly sorry, but I'm afraid we won't be able to use you. We'll pay you the half salary for canceling.
Well, are things really that bad?
We're using the ski tow to hang the wash on.
She turns to Bob.
You aren't going to stay either, are you?
Well, if the girls are leaving, I'll just get the luggage here.
A man in a cardigan sweater enters, carrying wood.
General Waverly!
Bob salutes.
Sir.
At ease. How are you, Captain?
I'm fine, General, but...
We just try to keep the general part quiet.
Why? Begging your pardon, sir.
Well, to put it in one sentence, people don't expect a major general to carry firewood.
I was just thinking,
Phil drops his bags and salutes.
Private Davis, sir.
At ease, Davis.
General Waverly. A janitor.
Never thought I'd make it, huh?
Oh, yes, sir. You could do anything you put your mind to, sir. But, a janitor?
Matter of fact, it's worse than that. I own this hotel.
A landlord.
He got it in a shrewd business move.
If I, start the introductions, can I, get to meet these young ladies?
Why, sure.
My housekeeper, Miss Emma Allen. My granddaughter, Susan Waverly.
We're the Haines sisters.
Your floor show. Don't worry, I've already told them we'd have to cancel.
Why? We have a floor, haven't we?
Last time I looked, but who are they going to sing to?
Well, even if it's only to you and me, it'll be well worth it. Besides, there'll be 6 inches of snow tonight. We'll be full up tomorrow.
Is that the weather forecast?
No, but if there was one thing I learned in the Army, it was to be positive. Especially when you don't know what you're talking about.
General Waverly, we want you to know that you needn't feel obligated. I mean, since there's no snow...
Nonsense. We've made a contract. Your first performance is tonight at 8 o'clock. Be there or I'll sue.
He winks.
Here.
Emma, the housekeeper, hands him a bag of groceries.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, I'm on KP.
Yes, sir.
Bob and Phil salute. Later, in the Barn Dinner Club, Betty and Judy perform.
Those who've seen us know that not a thing could come between us. Many men have tried to split us up, but no one can.
Aside from the staff, only 2 tables are occupied.
Lord, help the mister who comes between me and my sister. And Lord, help the sister who comes between me and my man.
Near the back of the room, Bob gazes at Waverly and reminisces.
We ate and then he ate. We slept and then he slept.
Yeah, then he woke up and nobody slept for 48 hours.
They grin softly.
Sisters? Sisters?
The girls cross a shiny wooden floor, past empty tables and a long open bar. Later, they join the boys.
Hi, girls.
Hey.
Hi.
You know what? I think Bob and I can give you some pointers on that sister number.
No, man. I don't like the wardrobe.
It's so pretty.
Isn't this awful?
That's
that?
It's like taking money under false pretenses. Emma, couldn't you talk him into letting us work for half salary?
Not Light Horse Harry. Advance, advance, never retreat. He's advancing right into bankruptcy.
How deep's he in here?
He's sunk everything. His pension, his life savings, everything in remodeling this place. Used to be a grist mill and a barn. Now it's a Tyrolean haunted house. Well, eat hearty.
There ought to be something we can do about it.
Oh, there is. We're going to New York in the morning.
New York?
But you just got here.
We got some connections there, some good ones. We can dig him up a spot somewhere.
Yeah, but that takes too long. The problem is here, now. We've got to stay up here and dream up some way of getting people to come into this place.
Well, what do you suggest?
I don't know. It should be something unusual, some kind of a novelty that...
Well, tell me, Brainstorm, what do you think would be a novelty up here in Vermont?
Who knows? Maybe we can dig up a Democrat.
Oh, they'd stone him.
Well, if you ask me, what this place really needs is a dynamite act.
Now you're talking. If we could get something really big, something sock, like,
Like Wallace and Davis.
No, honey, you couldn't get them. They're too big. Wait a minute, Wallace and Davis. How about that, Bob? We could do our old nightclub act, fit the girls in here and there. Might be wonderful. What do you say?
I think you got something.
Huh?
It's a great idea. It's half a great idea, anyhow. Will you excuse me?
Young lady, give me the New York operator, huh?
Okay, Mr. Wallace. This way.
Waverly's granddaughter, Susan, leads him out.
I don't know what he's up to, but he's got that Rodgers and Hammerstein look again.
Is that bad?
Not bad, but always expensive.
Excuse me.
He follows Bob to the lobby telephone.
I know it sounds crazy, Al, but you're working for crazy people. Now, get this straight. I want the whole show up here in 3 days. Yeah, the whole show. Sets, costumes, and all the cast you can round up.
Hey, wait a minute. What's this going to cost?
Everybody gets an extra week's pay, and you get a bonus, Al.
What's this going to cost?
We open Christmas Eve.
The tab, how much?
Al, what's this going to set us back? Wow.
How much is wow?
Well, okay, Al. Do the best you can. Good luck.
How much is wow? Well,
we got a big job, Buster, a big job. Now, whatever acts we can't get, we fill in with the Haynes sisters.
How much is wow?
It's right in between between ouch and poing.
Wow. Come on. I'm right behind you.
Emma rushes down from the second floor.
I won't tell the general. You do it your own way. But I think bringing your show up here is just one of the nicest...
Well, how did you know?
Well, like any decent, self-respecting housekeeper, I listened in on the other phone. I just don't know what to say.
She grabs Phil and kisses him.
He thought of it.
Oh, well, it was a lovely thought.
She plants one on Bob, too.
Wow.
Hey, let's get hold of yourself.
Come on.
Emma blows her nose.
Hurry up, kids. Check in the lobby for your room numbers.
Daytime. Dozens of people unload trucks outside the ski lodge. As they move boxes, set pieces, lumber, and costumes into the barn, Waverly drives up in an old army jeep. He scans the hubbub, amazed.
All right, kids, find your rooms, get settled. Get your rehearsal costumes on. We start rehearsals right after breakfast.
Later, Waverly walks with Bob and Phil.
I still don't understand it. You mean you brought your whole show up here?
Well, most of it, sir.
Well, it's still not clear to me. Why?
Well, we have this show. Now, we have to close down for the holidays, lay the cast off, and business is bad, so...
I know about business being bad. Go on.
Figured since we had a chance to rehearse, we might as well do our rehearsing up here. See?
Why here?
Well, you got this nice, big, empty ski lodge, and the minute Phil and I saw it, we decided it was ideal, didn't we, Phil?
That's right, Bob. Ideal. That's exactly the word we used, too, ideal. We looked at this big ski lodge, and we said... Isn't it ideal? Absolutely ideal, didn't we?
Ideal.
We've established the fact the lodge is ideal.
And it gives us a chance, you see, sir, to test new material.
On what?
On the audience. We use them like guinea pigs.
Pigs we can get for you. I'm not so sure about people.
Well, with all due modesty, sir, Wallace and Davis never had any trouble packing them in, sir. People, that is, not pigs.
Well, go ahead if you want to. Apparently, there's quite a bit about show business I don't understand.
Oh, it'll come to you, sir.
This takes time.
Sure, we wouldn't be any good as generals.
You weren't any good as privates.
Later at rehearsal.
All right, kids, let's take it from the top. What's he got? Bumbly.
Phil inspects a corps of dancers waving their arms and shaking tambourines. At the front of the group, a man practices ballet lifts with Judy. At the other end of the huge barn, crew members drag a set piece onto the stage, lying it on its back to fit under the low-hanging beams. Later, several dancers glance at a chalkboard which reads, Minstrel Number, Dress Rehearsal, 2 o'clock. Now, Bob and Phil wear navy blue tuxedos with bright red shirts and gloves.
I'd rather see a minstrel show than any other show I know. All those comical folks with their riddles and jokes. Ah, here is the riddle that I love the best. Why does a chicken go
and know the rest?
Yes, sir. I pawn my overcoat and vest to see a minstrel show.
They dance over to Betty, who wears a strapless, sparkling navy blue dress. In the lavender background, white chairs line two raised platforms. Showgirls in flashy red bodysuits and men in emerald green tuxes dance around them.
Mr. Bones, Mr. Bones, how do you feel, Mr. Bones?
Rattling.
Mr. Bones feels rattling. Ha ha, that's a good one. Tell a little story, Mr. Bones.
A funny little story, Mr. Bones.
How can you stop an angry dog from biting you on Monday?
That joke is old. The answer is to kill the dog on Sunday.
That's not the way to stop a dog from biting you on Monday.
How would you bring a thing about?
Have the doggy's teeth pulled out.
Oh, Mr. Bones, that's terrible.
Yes, Mr. Bones, that's terrible.
Lifting their knees high, they weave around each other, then stop with Bob in the middle.
Mr. Interlocutor.
What is wrong with you?
Well, I know of a doctor.
Tell about him, do.
Sad to say, one day he fell right into a great big well.
Oh, that's too bad.
Why not at all?
Why speak in such a tone?
He should have attended to the sick and let the well alone.
That's a joke. Oh, that was told. In the minstrel days we miss.
When Georgie Primrose used to sing and dance to a song like this. Mandy!
Now on a tall fire engine red platform, Judy rises up through a trap door.
Mandy!
She wears a sequined white bodysuit, a long crinoline train, and long red gloves.
Mandy!
Descending the stairs, Judy blinks flirtatiously at the men from the chorus, then links arms with Bob and Phil. They sashay left in wide, jazzy steps.
He's got his rent to pay, so don't delay. It's not a day to linger.
Here's a ring for your finger.
We advise
to live in love and honor and obey before he gets away. Make it handy.
Judy winks at us and shrugs playfully, the sequins on her bodysuit and gloves sparkling. Bob and Phil tap dance away from her, then return to her side, flapping their arms and stamping.
The wedding chimes bring happy time for Mandy and me.
Bob and Phil exit. Two men take the white, veil-like train from Judy's waist and hold it above her head like a crinoline archway. She throws up her arms and wiggles her hands. Then she crosses to Johnny, a dark-haired athletic man in a light green suit. Extending legs and arms in sharp, razzle-dazzle movements, they spin, reach their arms out wide, and turn back to back. Johnny watches her twirl, then leads her through a series of tiptoe turns and dramatic dips. Behind them, four men bend their elbows and knees, forming a line of angular body shapes. In the background, Betty stands on the stairs, above chorus dancers shaking red tambourines. Now, Johnny supports Judy from behind. She holds her arms out straight, kicks high, and steps across the floor. She spins beneath his upraised arm, then steps out to one side with a flourish. The men in back lunge, clap their hands as if brushing off dust, then run off stage and return with emerald green top hats. Three times, Judy arches her back over Johnny's arm, rocks forward on one leg, and kicks the other backwards in a high vertical split. We glimpse Bob, Betty, and Phil, who grin and shake red tambourines with faces on them. Judy, Johnny, and two dozen chorus members shake and tap their tambourines high above their heads. They point their toes, hop from one foot to the other, and wave their reaching arms from side to side in hallelujah gestures. Judy does a front walkover into the waiting arms of five men. They lift her high above their heads, where she does a split. Then they put her down, and Johnny ushers her back to the stairs. She waits with her back to us, then arches it as two men run in and carry her up to the platform. Johnny hops backward up the steps. Chorus men form two lines leading downward, and Judy leaps into their arms. She falls back into the arms of a second group. They flip her backward, then lift her onto Johnny's right shoulder. The whole cast poses on the steps, arms wide. Waverly, Susan, and Emma sit among empty tables.
Wonderful. This will bring business in, Grandpa.
The cast disperses. Betty sits at a piano below the stage. Bob, Judy, and Phil follow.
Was everything all right, really?
All right. Well, tonight you have been sexy, honey.
Sensational.
Just great. Wonderful.
Judy, was the tempo a little slow for you right here, honey? Mandy, there's a minister handy.
Oh, yeah, but you gotta...
Bob reaches around her with both arms to play. As she turns her face to him, their eyes lock.
Minister hand. Isn't that better?
Yes, I can see that's better.
Oh, that's much better. Much, much better.
Judy and Phil raise their eyebrows. Nighttime. Across a wide dirt pathway, two bungalows face each other, one gray, one red. As Bob exits the gray one, Phil peeks out its window and winks to Judy across the way. She nods back and mouths the words, "I'll be right there." She turns away and watches Betty squirming in bed.
Anything wrong?
No, I'm just restless.
Anything, on your mind?
Uh-uh. Just restless.
Maybe you'd sleep better if you had something to eat, huh?
No, honey, I'm not hungry.
Emma said she left some sandwiches down the snack bar.
Judy, go to sleep.
And some buttermilk.
Good night, Judy.
Night. They say if you eat something right before you go to bed, it helps to,
Judy.
No. It drains the blood from the head, in case you're thinking of anything or anybody or just anything.
All right. Fine, okay, swell. I'll go and get something to eat. Not because I want something to eat, but because if I don't get something to eat, you won't go to sleep. Good night.
Night.
Betty puts on a robe and overcoat, then exits. As she walks past the boys' bungalow, Phil and Judy watch from their windows. She mouths, "Okay," and he gestures that he'll be right out. Betty enters the barn and passes a raised platform with a round fireplace at its center. She spots Bob at an upright piano and approaches him.
Hi.
Well, hello. What's doing?
I couldn't sleep.
Well, you're a little young for that route, aren't you?
Well, I heard something about sandwiches and buttermilk.
Oh, sister, this is the place. We're loaded here. We got New England Blue Plate or the Vermont Smorgasbord. Not as flashy as Toots Shores, probably, but I think you find the prices right. What'll you have?
Anything.
Well, tell me what you want to dream about. I know what to give you.
What's that?
I got a whole big theory about it, you know. Different kinds of food make for different kinds of dreams. Now, if I have a ham and cheese on rye like that, I dream about a tall, cool blonde, sort of a first sacker type, you know? Turkey? Dream about a brunette. A little on the scat back side, but oh, sexy.
What about liverwurst?
Dream about liverwurst.
He pours milk from a pitcher.
It's a little chilly in here, isn't it?
Oh, I got just the spot for you. Here, grab the cow. We'll gather around the fire, huh? Got a nice open hearth job here with some Vermont logs burning briskly. Isn't this nice?
What?
Glad you came.
Better than a picnic.
Why, certainly. No sand or yellow jackets buzzing around.
I can't understand what's wrong with me. I usually don't have any trouble sleeping.
Well, you've come to the right fella. Here, sit down.
They sit by the fire.
You know, I have a theory about that, too. Would you like to hear it?
Very much.
When I'm worried and I can't sleep, I count my blessings instead of sheep. And I fall asleep counting my blessings.
Facing her, he adjusts the collar of her coat.
When my bankroll is getting small, I think of when I had none at all. I fall asleep counting my blessings. I think about a nursery and I picture curly heads, and one by one I count them as they slumber in their beds.
He warms her hand between both of his.
If you're worried and you can't sleep, just count your blessings instead of sheep, and you'll fall asleep counting your blessings.
They smile at each other. Then Bob crosses to a table and fills his pipe with tobacco. Betty follows.
Do you mind if I say something just for the record?
Oh, of course not.
I think what you're doing for the General is one of the most decent, unselfish things I've ever heard of.
No angle?
No angle. I want to apologize for the way I sounded in Florida. I guess I've always been kind of a silly schoolgirl. You know the bit, the Lady Fair and the Knight on the White Horse.
Let me tell you something. It's kind of dangerous putting those knights up on white horses. Likely to slip off, you know.
I think mine's there to stay.
That's sure good to know. Makes a fellow feel a little shaky, though, up there all alone on one of those bleached chargers.
You worried?
Kind of.
If you're worried and you can't sleep, just count your blessings instead of sheep. And you'll fall asleep counting your blessings.
Bob folds her in his arms and they kiss.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I was just after a little something for a sweet tooth. I see, you beat me to it.
You find the Vermont smorgasbord very good, General. Make you sleep like a baby.
Thank you.
Waverly smiles warmly, winks, and crosses to the bar.
So you know something? You still haven't eaten anything.
I know exactly what I'm going to dream about tonight.
Good for you.
As they kiss again, Judy and Phil peek in through the curtains of an arched window. They smile, then shake hands in solidarity and hug. Daytime, outside. Waverly sits on a bench near men playing horseshoes.
Hold your fire, man. I'm coming through.
Waverly rolls a cigarette as Bob drives up in the Jeep.
Morning, Captain.
Morning, General.
Hey, it looks like you're on active duty.
Yeah, Emma drafted me for a few chores, and I picked up the handbills for the new show.
Oh?
Look pretty good, huh?
Well, hey, that ought to bring in quite a few guinea pigs, huh?
You ever hook up with the fellas in the horseshoe game?
No, I'm a little too young for that sort of thing. Figure a fella ought to hold off on horseshoes till after the parade's passing by.
Oh, that'll be some time, sir. Get it?
Thank you.
Bob lights the cigarette.
Look, Bob, I still don't know too much about show business and guinea pigs, but in case you and Phil are worried about the welfare of a certain Vermont innkeeper, you needn't be. His innkeeping days are numbered.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Percentage's going to catch up with the weatherman one of these days. You know, I've been watching those clouds, and there's snow in them.
Those are cumulus clouds, elevation 7,000 feet.
Yeah? Well, I wouldn't be surprised if it snowed overnight.
I want to tell you something I haven't even told the women folk. I'm going back in the Army.
Really?
I've applied for active duty.
Well, that's wonderful news, sir.
I got an idea. They may try to palm off one of those desk jobs on me, but they'd better not. I'm holding out for a training command or something overseas.
Well, when will you hear, sir?
Expect a letter from Washington any day now.
Oh, holy smoke, I'm really on the ball. And I got the mail right here, and I think there's a letter for you, General. Yeah. Here it is, from Washington, too.
It looks like the one at...
War Department, see? Got to be
I left my glasses are in my room. I would like to read this by myself, but I'm a little anxious. Read it, son. Slowly.
Bob holds the paper out far.
Starting to play trombone a little, too, but see if I can get focused in here. Dear Tom, why, you dirty old...
Skip that word.
Certainly was a surprise hearing from you. Your amusing letter was appreciated more than you imagine. Of course, you got plenty of time to be amusing, sitting on that porch rocking away while we put in a full day's work.
You always were a lucky stiff, and I envy you. A few years more, I was saying to Edie the other evening, and I'll be able to take it easy like old Tom.
Old Tom.
Bob's brow twitches as he glances at Waverly.
Oh, well, some people have all the luck. Everything's fine here. Carol had the mumps, which is...
The rest of the letter is about the family. He's telling me that, well, they can't use me. No place for me. We're not fooling each other. Bob, it wouldn't be too hard to learn this game of horseshoes, now, would it?
A cinch. Begging your pardon, sir, but there's really a lot to be said for leisure. Of course, you've always been active, but in time...
Never kid a kidder, son. See you later.
A horseshoe lands near the general's feet.
That's a good one.
As he walks away to join the game, Bob watches with a keen blue-eyed stare. His brow wrinkled in thought, he taps his teeth with the end of his pipe. Now, Johnny leads a chorus rehearsal.
Fine, fine. All right, kids, take a rest.
I'm sure it's a great idea.
Bill.
Science, Bill.
Ready to run through the choreography number.
I'll be with you in a minute. I tell you, it's the craziest thing I ever heard of. How are you going to get a whole division up here by Christmas Eve?
Well, so we don't get a whole division, but there must be enough guys in New England alone from the old man's outfit to fill a town this size. At least enough guys to let him know he's not forgotten.
Don't you think putting the show on will do it?
Phil, if you'd have seen the look in his eyes when he read that letter, you'd know it wouldn't.
It's going to take 5 days to put the show on, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, how are we going to get in touch with all the fellas?
Television, Ed Harrison. I'm going to go put a call into him now. And I'll go on down to New York, and if I can swing it, I'll get on his show and make a pitch to the guys myself. What do you think of it?
I think it's impossible, ridiculous, and insane.
Anything else?
Yeah. I wish I'd thought of it first.
You rehearse the number. I'll put the call in, boy.
Okay.
Hey, Johnny, get the kids for a dress rehearsal, will you?
Now, in the lobby of the inn.
Emma?
Huh?
Could you put in a long-distance call for me? I want to get Ed Harrison, New York City.
The television Ed Harrison?
That's the fella, yeah. You catch him at Radio City, I think, and let's keep it quiet. This is kind of a personal thing.
Oh, sure, sure. Ed Harrison, television. Radio City.
She sits at her switchboard. Now, a dressing room chalkboard reads, Dress Rehearsal for Choreography.
All right, fellas, from the top.
On stage, six women wearing drab, plum-colored dresses gather around Phil in angular, abstract poses. With emotionless faces, the women break off into awkward, jerky movements. Phil snakes his arms. Then they all move in unison like a broken machine. The barefoot women swirl together, sag gloomily, then throw their arms up to Phil. Phil reproaches them with a commanding arm swing. He wears an artist's dull black outfit, a beret, mock turtleneck, and slipper shoes. Agonized, the women peel away. Phil traipses after them, then collapses woefully across a staircase.
The theater, the theater. What's happened to the theater? Especially where dancing is concerned.
Chaps. They're doing choreography.
He shuffles forward.
Chicks who did kicks aren't kicking anymore. They're doing choreography. Heps who did steps that would stop the show in days that used to be. Through the air they keep flying like a duck that is dying. Instead of dance, it's choreography.
Judy floats down onto the stage. Only the point of her right shoe taps. Phil and the other women marvel. Judy switches to her left shoe point. Smiling, Judy taps smoothly back and forth. Phil and his troupe of modern dancers swivel their squared arms. Judy wears a hot pink mini dress and a muff on one hand. Phil trudges around her. Out of nowhere, Johnny shoots up onto the stage. He whirls through the air, across the stage, and kneels. Judy dances over, but Phil circles her away. Johnny spins her around, smiles, and jukes his shoulders. Judy grins back, and they dance side by side. With wild sweeping arms, Phil pleads, holds a woebegone hand over his brow, then swirls away. Johnny wears a tan suit with sharp shoulders and a red tie. In unison, Johnny and Judy spin, sidestep, and skate across the slick floor. Phil and the modern dancers sweep onto the stage, then, in unison, jerk their legs and arms up and down. Phil screws up a grin and windmills his arms. He leaps onto a small triangular platform. While he writhes and shoots his arms skyward, the women turn the platform counterclockwise. Grinning, Johnny and Judy tap and spin clockwise around them. Phil jumps down and runs after the jazzy, sauntering couple. Phil jumps between them. Johnny lowers Judy to the floor. Both men spin at her sides, then lift her over their heads. Judy trades a swing with each partner. All three dip forward, then spin back to the steps. Surrounded by the modern dancers, Johnny and Judy hold up their arms. Phil convulses his arms and legs around, then freezes in a contorted stance. Now, Bob on the phone at the front desk.
Ed, I know it's a long shot, but there's no other way to reach the men in a hurry. How's it sound? Huh?
Oh, I love the idea of doing something for the old man. But if it weren't for him, I wouldn't know how to peel a potato. But look, why don't you go all out? Put the whole show on TV. I'll come up there myself. Bring the camera, the crew, the works.
Thanks, Ed, but that's not the idea.
It's a great idea.
Emma picks up an extension.
Put the show on the whole network, right from Pine Tree. Play it up big. A real Christmas Eve show. All about how you're playing Santa Claus to the old man. You know, plenty of schmaltz, lots of heart. Would be worth over $100,000 in free advertising for you and Phil. Yeah, and we'll put the old boy on himself. You know, the forgotten man angle. Tear their hearts out.
Emma hangs up as Susan enters.
Here's the laundry, Emma.
I'm sorry, Ed. Sorry, but that's out. We're not commercializing on the old man's hard luck. No chance. All I want to do is go on your show and make a little pitch. Okay? Wonderful, wonderful. See you Sunday night, then. Bye.
Take it upstairs, Susan.
All right.
Emma picks up the phone, hears nothing, and hangs up. Then she sees Bob leaving. Betty enters through another door.
Emma! Oh, was there a telegram for me?
What? Oh, yeah. Just an offer from the Carousel Club in New York. Anytime you and Judy are available.
What's your technique, holding them up to the light?
That's for amateurs. I use steam.
You're quite a pro.
No, I'm thinking of turning in my uniform.
Huh?
Stick your nose in other people's business, and eventually you find out things you wish you hadn't.
Anything specific?
Did you know the boys are planning to put this whole show on television?
Television?
Right from here on Christmas Eve. I just heard Bob fix it with Ed Harrison. Oh, it's a big deal. Real schmaltz, I think they called it. They're even going to put the general on.
I just can't believe it.
Well, that'll make him a pathetic figure from coast to coast. What's it going to do to his pride? Of course, you know it means over $200,000 worth of free publicity for Davis and Wallace.
Emma, that's a terrible thing to say.
I didn't say it. Bob Wallace said it. I just heard him.
No. Bob wouldn't be involved in a thing like that. I'm sure you're wrong.
Well, if I am, I'll resign as president of the New England chapter of Busybodies Anonymous.
Oh, dear.
She hurries to the switchboard as Phil enters.
Hi, Betty. Have you seen Bob? Do you know whether he made that phone call in New York or not, Emma?
I understand he did.
Oh, good.
I hear the television's entered the picture.
Oh, well, then he worked it out, huh?
Beautifully.
It's a great little angle, isn't it?
Brilliant.
Listen, keep this under your hat, will you? We wouldn't want the general to know about it because it's...
I can understand that.
Betty, that was Bob. He's waiting to rehearse in the dining room.
Anything wrong?
Tell him I'm on the way.
Judy enters.
Hi, hon. How about some lunch?
I'm not hungry.
But, Betty, you did...
I said I'm not hungry.
What's with her?
I'm not sure, but I have an idea. I want to think about it.
Yeah, well, let's think about it over a sandwich, will you, kid? I'm starving at this.
They exit outside.
Another rehearsal's got me crazy. I don't know where...
In the barn, chorus members trot down the steps from the stage. Betty rushes in and bumps one of the women. She climbs up the steps and crosses to Bob at the piano.
Oh, howdy. I was just going over this blessings number. Might be something we could do together. You want to try it from the release?
When my bankroll is getting small...
She glances at the music with disinterest, then sits stiffly beside the piano.
I fall asleep counting my blessings
What's the matter? Bad key for you?
Look, I don't think I'm right for this song.
Well, of course you are. It lays great for you. Come on, now, let's try it.
No, I really don't think I'm right for it.
Yeah, now, don't be silly.
What I'm trying to say is I don't feel like doing the song. I don't want to do the song. In fact, I'm not sure I'd want to do the show.
Well, what is this? You sleep well last night or what?
I'd rather not discuss last night, if you don't mind.
Oh, come now. I admit I was a little carried away and everything, but there's no use getting all upset. Just a simple little kiss. Nobody signed a contract. There's certainly nothing for you to feel guilty about.
Look who's talking about guilt.
Now, what do you mean by that?
I mean you shouldn't mix fairy tales with liverwurst and buttermilk.
What'd you have for lunch today?
I didn't have lunch.
Well, maybe you ought to eat some.
Why is everybody suddenly so concerned about my eating habits? Why don't people just leave me alone?
Whoa, time, cut. Let's get off the merry-go-round. Now, if you got something to say, say it. Otherwise, let's get to work. I got a lot of details here to take care of.
Well, then, let's just skip all this. I certainly wouldn't want to interfere with the business plans of the great Wallace and Davis.
Well, that's quite a remark.
I'm sorry. It's the best I can do.
Look, Betty, I've got no time for games today. Now, you going to sing the song or not?
I don't want to sing the song.
Well, nobody's twisting your arm, you know.
Is that all, Mr. Wallace?
Yes, that's all, Miss Haynes.
She pushes a chair and hurries down the steps. Bob smacks the piano, then walks away, scratching his head. Betty storms past the fireplace where Judy and Phil sit roasting hot dogs.
Things ought to be done today.
They watch Betty storm out, then Bob, through a door at the other side of the room. They shoot each other a look, put down their hot dogs, and cross the fireplace platform. It is lined with cushioned benches built into the wall below arched windows. Judy and Phil peek outside, then sit on a bench.
Well, how do you figure that?
I'm not sure, but daylight's beginning to glimmer. Last night she couldn't sleep. Today she won't eat. She's in love.
Well, if that's love, somebody goofed.
Oh, it's love, all right, but she's deliberately putting up barriers. I bet my bottom dollar on it.
Why?
Because of me. She's always felt that she's mother hen and I'm her little chick. She'll never leave the roost until I'm taken care of.
That's funny. Are you sure?
Oh, I should have known. She'll never get involved with anyone until I'm married or engaged or something.
Well, I guess that's the end of that.
Unless I get myself engaged or something real fast.
Well, that's ridiculous. Even if it made any sense at all, you're up here in the wilderness. There's nobody around here.
I don't know.
Oh, be realistic. Who could you find up here to get yourself engaged to?
Well, I suppose it ought to be someone that I know.
Oh, that always helps.
And of course, it's got to be a man.
That's an absolute must.
Oh, no. I mean a mature man, you know, one with talent and experience.
Talent, experience.
One that's witty, gay, charming, attractive.
Oh, sure. Where are you going to find such a superman?
Don't be so modest.
Honey, fellas like that don't...
He scoots away. She follows.
Me?
Well, you're not exactly Superman, but you're awfully available.
Yeah, now, don't get any ideas, Judy. I'm not the marrying kind.
Oh, it's just an engagement.
Yeah, well, I'm not the engaging kind either.
Well, what kind are you?
Well, I'm more the I don't mind pushing my best friend into it, but I'm scared stiff when I get anywhere close to it myself in kind.
Oh. How terrible could it be for a few days? You do like me, don't you?
Sure I do.
I mean, I'm not exactly repulsive.
Of course, of course not.
He quivers in a corner.
And you do find me gay, amusing, good company, fun to be with.
Sure, but I feel the same way about my Cocker Spaniel.
Oh, well, let's just skip it. I was only thinking of Betty and Bob.
Betty and Bob, yeah. Look at, It'd only be temporary, huh?
She leans in close.
Well, of course. Well, you don't think I'm the kind of girl that goes around throwing myself at a man, do you?
Of course not. Nobody thinks that. Well, look, let me figure this out now. It would only last 2 or 3 weeks at the worst. At the most, I mean.
Well, of course.
And we wouldn't have to announce our engagement until it was absolutely necessary?
Absolutely necessary.
Well, okay, it's a deal.
She gazes at him alluringly.
But don't you think we ought to kiss or something?
Not until it's absolutely necessary.
He sinks into the cushions. Now the chalkboard reads, Cast Party Tonight, On the House, T.F. Waverly. At the party, Susan serves coffee to guests who chat in small groups. Doris, the blonde chorus girl, turns to Betty, who sits alone on a sofa.
Isn't it a wonderful party?
Betty forces a smile, nods, and stirs her coffee without looking at it. Judy and Phil watch her from across the room, where they stand, leaning against a piano. Phil blinks in distress, rubs his chin, then leans it in his hand. Judy elbows him and nods to a couch in a different corner of the room. Bob sits there, alone, lighting his pipe. He shakes his head as Emma offers him an hors d'oeuvre. Phil whispers something in Betty's ear, and she crosses to Bob.
Bob?
Huh?
Would you like to dance?
Well, I'm game if you are.
Hey, Betty, how about some exercise? Come on.
Phil takes Betty by the hand.
The best things happen while you're dancing.
Phil dances with Betty, Judy with Bob. Phil makes an arch with Judy's hand and gently pushes Betty under it into Bob's arms.
For dancing.
Before they make eye contact, another man cuts in. Bob walks away. Doris tries to move in, but Judy grabs him for another dance.
Even guys with two left feet.
Again, Phil and Judy pair Betty with Bob. Again, the extra man tries to cut in.
By chance, their cheeks should meet.
Phil grabs the man's hand and steers him over to Doris.
Mr. Herring, this is Miss Lennis.
How do you do?
Mutual, I'm sure.
Bye.
May I?
Before Judy and Phil can return to supervise, Betty steps out of Bob's embrace. As she goes back to her lonely sofa, he watches with sad eyes but doesn't protest. He returns to his sofa, refills his pipe, and sits. Back at the piano, Phil leans his discouraged chin on his fist. Judy crouches beside him.
Looks like it's absolutely necessary.
Well, what do you mean? Hold it a minute, fellas. Give me a little chingering, will you?
Folks, I have an announcement to make.
An announcement.
I want you all to be the first to know. I don't know whether the best things happen while you're dancing or whether they just happen in Vermont. But Judy has just agreed to, she just asked me. That is, she just said, well, what I'm trying to say is that Judy and I are engaged.
Betty sits up and gapes, stricken. Bob gawks. As the fiancés hug, Doris steps in.
I sure wish it would happen to me.
Yeah, I do too.
Now Betty gets up, crosses to her sister, and gives her a big hug. Her eyes well up.
It's just wonderful, darling. I'm so happy for you.
Well, I hoped you would be. Oh, is everything all right?
Sure, it's all right. I'm fine. You realize you're getting the best girl in the whole wide world.
Oh, yeah.
You take care of her.
Sure.
I'd say this calls for champagne.
I'll help you, Emma.
As Betty exits with Emma, Bob approaches Phil and Judy.
Congratulations, kids.
Thanks, Bob.
I don't know what you see in this long drink of charged water, but honestly, after you get to know him, he's almost endurable. Well, you're going to settle down, huh, Buster? The pipe, slippers, full treatment.
Yeah,
all
the
best, boy.
Thanks, Bob. But by the way, the water is fine. Why don't you take a little plunge?
Oh, I don't know. It seemed a little icy today.
Ah. Oh, that's today. I have a feeling by tomorrow it'll warm up just fine.
Well, you sold me. I'll go.
He leaves, and Waverly steps in.
Well, don't just stand there. Aren't you going to kiss the bride?
Kiss the... Oh, yes, sir.
A tiny peck.
Yes, sir.
Much bigger kiss.
That didn't hurt too much, did it?
You know, in some ways, you're far superior to my Cocker Spaniel. At ease, General. Oh!
Phil and Judy hug, then dance away, grinning happily. In a hallway leading to the kitchen, Emma stops Bob.
Champagne?
Yeah, I think I will.
He takes two into the kitchen.
Champagne?
He finds Betty and gives her a glass.
Here. Let's drink to their happiness, huh? Buttermilk and liverwurst and getting things back to where they were yesterday.
He clinks her glass, then drinks. Betty just stares at him, stone-faced. From a distance, Judy and Phil grin at what looks like a successful reconciliation, then dance away. Bob finishes his drink. Betty puts hers down and rushes out. Bob stands in the doorway, frowning in confusion. Later, Judy sits on her bed, facing Betty's back.
I know we always said we'd never break up the act, but... Well, that wasn't really very realistic. I mean, well, we both knew that someday one of us or... Well, both of us would want to be free.
Besides, now that I'm taken care of, you don't have to feel responsible for me anymore. I mean, if there's anything special you want to do, you can just feel free now to go ahead and do it. Isn't that true? I say, isn't that true? Betty, honey, are you asleep?
She can't see Betty's eyes, filled with tears and staring at the wall.
Good night.
With a puzzled frown, Judy tucks her legs under the covers and lies on her side. Now, daytime at the train station. Waverly drives up in his Jeep, Betty in the passenger seat. As she climbs out, he hands her her suitcase.
Thanks, General. When you get back to the inn, would you give this to Judy?
A letter.
It explains everything.
I can't help feeling this is a tactical error. I kept watching you and Bob last night. I say what you two need is a good talking to.
No, General, this is a private war. Don't do anything.
I promise. Good luck.
Elsewhere on the platform, Bob talks with the station master.
Oh, sure, I know about that. But on Christmas Eve, we're going to have a lot of special trains coming in here from Boston, Philadelphia, and New York. Now, can you handle it okay?
I'll call the traffic manager.
Good, but remember, strictly off the record, huh?
Yes, Mr. Wall.
Thanks, Craig.
Bob turns around and sees Betty climbing onto the train.
Oh, Betty!
Bob runs to her and takes her hand as the train starts to move. He walks alongside it.
What's this? Where do you think you're going?
I'm going to New York. I've got a job.
You got a job? Where?
Goodbye, Bob. Good luck. I hope you have great success with the show.
Betty, about yesterday, if I said anything, I didn't mean...
Goodbye.
You know, I was so busy with other things, I must have sounded like an idiot, but...
Goodbye.
I didn't mean what you...
She lets go of his hand, leaving him gaping on the platform.
It's day five.
Rehearsal.
Hey, Judy. John, come on up here. Let's run through the Abraham number. What's the tempo on the last part?
Hey, keep it rocking, will you, fellas?
Judy and Johnny trot up to the stage and break into a hot tap dance number. Smiling vibrantly, they trounce the stage with high punching kicks and energetic spins. Judy's short yellow skirt whirls up to her waist, shoulders bounce, and arms pump the air. Grins and waves her upraised arms in a loose, carefree wiggle. Now a high-speed jitterbug. Pushing off each other's opposite hands, they twist around and back like a washing machine. Shoulder to shoulder, they circle each other, clapping. Now, Johnny glides her across the stage. She spins and they land in a sharp, reaching out pose. Phil kisses Judy on the cheek, pats Johnny on the shoulder, then gathers the chorus. Judy goes off stage.
Listen, all right, kids, come on up here. I want the boys in the back.
Susan brings Betty's letter.
Excuse me, Judy. It's for you, from Betty. She gave it to Grandpa at the station.
Station?
Judy steps away from her makeup table, opens the envelope, and unfolds the letter. Dear Judy, we always knew that one day we'd break up the act. I guess this is it. Phil's a wonderful guy, and I know you'll both be very happy. I've got good news, too. I've taken a job in New York. I open at the Carousel Club tomorrow.
Phil?
Phil!
What's the matter?
Phil, it's from Betty.
She hands him the letter and turns away. He reads it, biting his lip. Later, they stand by as Bob packs a suitcase.
How could you be stupid enough to try a stunt like this? Phony engagements and messing around with people's lives. You ought to be horsewhipped. First you, and then you, and then you again.
Gee whiz, Bob, I only did it for your own good.
Yeah, because I'm a lonely, miserable, unhappy man.
That's right, and when you're unhappy, I'm unhappy. After all, Bob, I...
Oh, no. You're not going to start again with that life-saving bit.
Well, I told you, I don't expect any gratitude.
I'm not even sure you saved my life. Sometimes I wish the wall had fallen on me.
Don't say that.
And you, her own sister. How could you do such a thing?
Well, it's always that she's been a kind of a mother hen.
Yeah, we wanted the mother hen to leave the roost so that the little chick could... Well, I guess we laid an egg.
An egg? Brother, you laid a Vermont volleyball. But I'm going to New York and try and square it with Betty. You ought to consider yourself plenty lucky. You might have been stuck with this weird's mobile for life.
Oh, Judy!
Oh, leave the kid alone. You've got her confused enough already.
Now, look, Bob, you don't understand one thing.
Boy, you've mixed things up beautifully. You have.
Will you listen to me
for
1 minute?
No, you listen to me. I got a little job for you to do if you think you can get one simple thing straight.
Well, try me.
Okay, the general always listens to the Ed Harrison show, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to be on about 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
Now, you tell Emma about it. Maybe she can help you. But the big thing is, don't let the general anywhere near that television set. You get me?
Don't worry, Bob. I'll keep him away from that television set if I have to break my arm.
Well, break your arm, your ankle, or your neck, but don't break anything valuable, huh?
Okay, Bob, you can depend on me. Let's see you. Break the arm.
Now, Bob enters the Carousel Club, passing a poster which touts Betty Haynes below a picture of her. Checking his watch, he approaches the host.
Good evening, Sir Wallace.
Marcel, how are you?
Fine, thank you, Andrew. I have a table all ready for you, sir. Oh, good.
Marcel leads him through the wide-open room, past carousel horses and draping white curtains.
Has Betty Haynes been on yet?
Not yet. In a few minutes, Mr. Wallace.
Good. I'm expecting Eddie Harrison, too. Show him to the table, huh?
Certainly, Mr. Wallace.
Thanks.
Marcel leaves. At the far end of the room, near the stage, Betty looks in a mirror. She wears white sequin gloves and a sleeveless black velvet dress with a V-shaped neckline. Its hourglass shape flares out from the knees into a train. Spotting Bob in the audience, Betty runs backstage to the orchestra leader.
Dick.
Yes, honey?
Let's not do the number we rehearsed this afternoon. Play Blue Skies, anything.
But the number sounded great at rehearsal, Betty.
I know it did, but I just... Oh,
it's a wonderful number, honey. Come on, let's do it. Please do.
He steers her into place behind a sheer red curtain. Out front, four men in black pants and turtlenecks stand in a line. They stare at the floor, legs spread wide apart so they touch each other's feet. Holding their fingers closed, they raise their arms, swivel their torsos, and turn away. The curtain rises. Betty saunters forward and leans an arm on the shoulders of two dancers.
Love, you didn't do right by me.
The men duck out of view.
You planned a romance that just hadn't a chance, and I'm through. Love, you didn't do right by me.
The men lean back in, then exit.
I'm back on the shelf and I'm blaming myself, but it's you.
One at a time, the men step into view, then leave.
My one love affair didn't get anywhere from the start. To send me a Joe who had winter and snow in his heart wasn't smart. Love, you didn't do right by me. As they say in the song, you done me wrong.
The men surround Betty, spin past her, and lunge. She turns away, then faces us, arms held up in a V.
My one love affair didn't get anywhere from the start.
One man hugs Betty stiffly, then looks away.
To send me a Joe who had winter and snow in his heart.
He leaves.
Wasn't smart, oh love. You didn't do right by me. As they say in the song, you done me wrong. Yes, Mr. Love, you done me wrong.
All the men exit, leaving Betty alone. She turns an aloof gaze to the floor. Alone at his table, Bob smiles in delight. Betty lifts the skirt of her long black velvet dress and crosses the room to join him.
Surprise! What brings you here?
Oh, I had a little business to take care of.
I see.
Some of it concerns you.
Really?
Yeah, sort of boils down to this. You didn't have to break up the act or run out of town because Judy and Phil's engagement was phony.
A phony?
It seems they're trying to figure out some way to get rid of any barriers between you and the altar. Seems like they thought you and I were serious about each other.
Just shows you how foolish people can be.
Yeah.
Why do people have to stick their noses in other people's business?
Well, that's Phil for you, I guess.
It's Judy for you.
The two of us are having some laughs together, and right away we're in love with each other.
Ridiculous.
Sure. Well, they're sorry about it now, and Judy wants you to come back. Matter of fact, I'd like to see you come back myself.
Well, I don't know.
Betty.
He takes her hand.
I know that knight of yours has slipped off his charger. Why, I don't know, but I'd like to do all I can to get him back up there again for you.
Mr. Wallace has been expecting you, sir.
A dark-haired man jogs up to the table.
Bob, come on. It's 8:30.
This is Ed Harrison. Miss Haynes?
How do you do?
Hi. Boy, what I went through for you. Sponsors, network, but I finally got it squared away, just the way you wanted.
That's swell, Ed.
Listen, come on, I got a cab waiting. We're late.
Just a second, Ed. Looks like I got a scoot. Could I see you later tonight, maybe?
I'm sorry, I have a date.
What about tomorrow?
No, I'll be busy all day.
Come on, will you?
You better go. You're keeping Mr. Harrison.
What'll I tell Judy?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to think about it. Goodbye, Bob.
Backstage at Ed's show, a clock reads 9:02. Bob stands by Ed's desk.
Think Phil will be able to keep the old man away from the television set?
Oh, I have complete confidence, Ed. When it comes to conniving or finagling, you can't beat this boy.
Now, in the barn.
Hello, girls.
Hello.
You have the right station?
Oh, yes.
Oh, sure.
Grandpa, the battery's dead on the Jeep. It's stuck out.
I'll fix it later. I don't want to miss the Ed Harrison show. Judy?
They sit by the fireplace.
Should be a very good show tonight, huh?
Emma.
General, come quickly.
What's this?
It's a terrible thing, Phil. Down the stairs. I tell you, it's an awful thing. Mercy! Don't see if you can help him.
Hi, Brett.
Oh, what is it? Did you fall downstairs?
Yes, sir.
Are you hurt?
I'm all right, sir. Probably just a small compound fracture, sir.
The women enter the lobby.
How does it feel?
It feels pretty good, sir. Put your weight on it. My weight.
Phil grips one leg in mock agony.
Susan, call a doctor.
Oh, please don't do that, sir. It's probably just a small internal muscular hemorrhage, sir. It'll be all right.
You'll feel better if we take you someplace where you can be comfortable.
Yes,
let's,
sir.
Let's just go back in here, sir. And you can watch the television.
Yes.
Phil crumples on the steps.
Oh, but, sir.
Well, I'm going to call a doctor.
Oh, please, sir. Don't bother. If you'll just help me back to the bungalow, I'm sure I'll be all right, sir.
Waverly pulls him up.
Thank you, sir. I wouldn't want to faint in front of the women, sir.
Waverly hooks Phil's arm around his shoulder. Phil nods at the girls.
I'll be all right.
Don't put your weight on it.
No, sir.
As Waverly leads him out, Phil gives the girls a big wink. Now, at the Ed Harrison show.
Thank you. And now it's a great privilege to present my special guest, an old pal from Army days, a great guy and a great entertainer, Bob Wallace.
As Bob joins him, wheeled cameras roll in closer.
Bob's got a special message tonight for all you guys who are part of the 151st Division. It's about someone who's very close to all of us. And he's going to tell you about it in his own special way. Bob?
Thanks, Eddie.
Ed exits.
When the war was over, why, there were jobs galore for the G.I. Josephs who were in the war. But for generals, things were not so grand. And it's not so hard to understand. What can you do with a general when he stops being a general? Oh, what can you do with a general who retires? Who's got a job for a general when he stops being a general? They all get a job, but a general no one hires.
Watching at the club, Betty smiles.
They fill his chest with medals while he's across the foam, and they spread the crimson carpet when he comes marching home. The next day someone hollers when he comes into view, "Here comes the general," and they all say, "General who?" They're delighted that he came, but they can't recall his name. Nobody thinks of assigning him when they've stopped whining and dining him. It seems this country never has enjoyed so many one and two and three and four star generals unemployed.
Bob nods and bows.
Like Eddie told you, that song is for the 151st Division. The officers and the men under the command of Major General Tom Waverly. I hope a lot of you guys were listening, because I have something I want you to do for me.
Yes. Don't you want to sit down? No, sir. If you'll just walk me around the barn a few times, I think it'll be fine, sir.
Phil checks his watch.
Yes. It's a little too fast, sir, if we just slow down a little bit, sir. Oh!
I know. I know it's murder asking you to leave your homes on Christmas Eve, and certainly a trip like this is no bargain, although it shouldn't be too tough for the fellows who live in the New England area. But remember this, nobody connected with the show is getting anything out of it.
Betty's eyes widen.
Except what we're offering you, a chance to give the nicest Christmas gift he'll ever get to the nicest guy we'll ever know. Remember, then, your objective is Pine Tree, Vermont. Synchronize your watches, then, for Operation Waverly.
Betty stares at the TV. Nighttime. Phil stands on the platform at the Pine Tree train station. Wearing a military police armband, he greets crowds of old army buddies amid upthrown arms and hugs. Later, men in overcoats usher women in furs into the inn. A poster reads, "Opening Christmas Eve, Bob Wallace and Phil Davis with the New York cast of their musical, Playing Around." Backstage, Bob rallies fellow soldiers as they don their old uniforms.
Hey, listen, man. When I give you the signal, I want you to fall in single file, huh? On each side of the stage. And I want you to fall in at attention like you did that day at Monte Catino when Clark came through. Huh, you remember? It's a big day for you. You got a lot of stuff hung on you, remember? I'm going to have you face the general. And when I give you the command to march, I want you to step right out just like you used to, huh?
A pot-bellied man tries to button his pants.
Captain, this thing's half shrunk.
Well, your appetite hasn't shrunk. Who's there?
Now, Waverly looks through his wardrobe. Emma and Susan stand by.
Well, they're sure gone. How could you have sent all my suits to the cleaners?
You've only got two.
Well, I think you'd send one at a time, then, in that case.
Why can't you wear your uniform?
Yes.
I won't appear in uniform.
Please, Grant.
Absolutely not.
Very well, I'll explain to Bob and Phil that you didn't care to come to the show tonight.
I'll have you court-martialed.
Susan, you're not obliged to go. They haven't done much for you, hardly anything.
Listen, Emma, I'll make my own decisions. I got along very well in the Army without you.
It took 15,000 men to take my place. Susan?
15,000 men.
Emma and Susan exit, then go downstairs. A cab drops off Betty, who enters the lobby.
If he comes down, that would be awful if he wouldn't.
It's Betty!
Emma and Susan run to greet her.
Welcome home,
hello,
Betty.
Hello.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Betty.
Where's Judy?
She's coming.
Judy runs in.
Oh, honey. Oh, I'm so glad you came.
Hello, Judy. You didn't say anything to Bob, did you?
Mm-mm.
Hurry up now. You haven't got much time to get ready.
Oh, if I weren't such a mean old biddy, I'd break right down and cry.
As she follows Judy and Betty toward the back door, Susan smiles. A pretty teenager of about 17, she turns away and spots her grandfather coming down the stairs in full dress uniform. She runs to him.
Grandpa, you look wonderful.
You didn't expect me to come down in my bathrobe, did you?
No.
She gazes up with an admiring smile, then takes his arm and they walk down the stairs. He smiles, then ushers her down a short hallway to his left, which leads to the barn. From inside the barn, Emma opens the door and steps aside to let them through.
Stand hut!
Susan steps back on the fireplace platform, joining Emma, who dabs her nose with a handkerchief. A spotlight beam falls on General Waverly, who scans the room with a stiff, confused scowl. Every table but one in the center is surrounded by guests. That table is adorned with an enormous three-layer cake, decorated with red candles and a miniature battle tank. The guests all stand, smiling warmly at Waverly and clapping. He walks down from the platform and follows his old right-hand man, a captain, past the line of four officers. As they all march him to the center table, Waverly blinks back tears. The crowd sits, and at the far end of the room, the stage curtains part. Waverly and the officers remain standing. Bob stands before the set, a crumbling wall in a barren, war-struck landscape.
Because we love him!
Phil and about 70 other soldiers march out from either side of the wall, gather into ranks of four, and follow Bob down the steps into the audience. Parting at the middle, the men step into two lines facing each other. This forms a path from Waverly's table up the steps and onto the stage. Again, Waverly blinks back tears.
With the grandest son of a soldier of them all.
Bob steps out and salutes.
Troops are ready for inspection, sir.
Waverly salutes back.
Just routine, sir.
Waverly glances at the captain by his side, then stiffens his posture and scowls. Circling around to the far side of his table, he walks slowly through the path between the men.
I am not satisfied with the conduct of this division. Some of you men are under the impression, having been at Anzio, entitles you not to wear neckties. Well, you're wrong. Neckties will be worn in this area. And look at the rest of your appearance. You're a disgrace to the outfit. You're soft. You're sloppy. You're unruly. You're undisciplined.
He pivots to face out, eyes teary again.
And I never saw anything look so wonderful in my whole life. Thank you all.
Walking down the steps and back through the pathway, Waverly shakes hands with many of the men, often reaching out with both hands at the same time. Near the front of the line, he faces Phil and gives him a warm, two-fisted handshake.
Thanks, Phil.
General.
Waverly goes to Bob.
I'm grateful, Captain.
They shake hands and Waverly returns to his table.
Get up!
A bugler stands at the edge of the stage. Waverly turns away from his troops, leans on the edge of his table, and blows out the candles on the cake. Phil holds two fingers in his mouth and whistles. As the soldiers disperse, Phil follows Bob off to the right. One soldier picks up his little girl and hugs her. In the background, Waverly shakes hands with the captain, then sits along with Susan, Emma, and the other officers. The stage curtains close for a few moments, then open again, revealing Bob and Phil. They march away from us, then back forward. Bob holds out an arm and opens his mouth as if to sing. Phil moves him aside.
When I was mustered out,
pull a cow,
I thought without a doubt, ho-ho, that I was through with all my care and strife.
Oh, well, I thought that I was then the happiest of men. But after months of tough civilian life,
they hop and tap.
Gee, I wish I was back in the army. The army wasn't really bad at all. 3 meals a day, 3 for which you didn't pay. Uniforms for winter, spring, and fall. There's a lot to be said for the army. The life without responsibility. A soldier out of luck was really never stuck. There's always someone higher up where you can pass the buck. Oh, gee, I wish I was back in the army.
Now, Judy and Betty enter, dressed in WAC uniforms, one-piece long-sleeved pantsuits with soft cloth side caps and thick-heeled shoes.
Gee, I wish I was back in the Army. The Army was the place to find romance. Soldiers in WACs, the WACs who dressed in slacks, dancing cheek to cheek in pants to pants.
They dance in pairs.
There's a lot to be said for the Army.
A gal was never lost for company. A million handsome guys with longing in their eyes. And all you had to do was pick the age, the weight, the size.
Oh, gee, I wish I was back in the Army.
They link arms, then break into two pairs and march around each other. The girls exit waving.
Gee, I wish I was back in the Army. The shows we got civilians couldn't see. How we would yell, hey, for Dietrich and Cornell, Jolson, Hope, and Benny, all for free. There's
a lot to be said for the Army. The best of doctors watched you carefully. A dentist and a clerk, for weeks and weeks they'd work. They'd make $1,000 job and give it to a jerk. Oh, gee, I wish I was back in the Army.
Now, four props, oversized civilian bodies, pop up. They cover the performers' bodies, but show their heads and feet.
3 meals a day for which you didn't pay.
1 million handsome guys with longing in their eyes.
I thought that I was through with all my care and strife. But after months and months of tough civilian life, oh gee, I wish I was back in the Army now.
Judy, Phil, Betty, and Bob tap dance and sidestep off stage as a single unit. In the audience, the captain steps up behind General Waverly and whispers to him. His smile fades into a frown, and he hurries out to the front lobby. Emma grabs the captain's wrist and pulls him over. Later, she and Susan watch as Waverly opens a pair of French doors and steps onto the front porch of the inn. A steady snow falls onto his outstretched hands. Backstage, Bob looks out a window.
Oh, Buster, looky here.
Hey, here it comes.
This is it.
Isn't this great?
They rush to the barn doors at the back of the stage.
Come on, Bill. Put that other pack down.
As they open them, a sleigh full of children drives by.
Look here. Isn't it great?
We make it snowed in here, pal.
Oh, boy, this is great.
Later, Bob talks to children backstage. He wears a Santa suit.
Remember, kids, now you're going to hold those candles up good and high for me, aren't you? And keep a nice straight line when you're out there. Don't go straggling all over the stage. How's your voice, Bob?
Hi, Bobby.
Oh, pardon me. Well, how's your voice? You all right? Give me a nice, clear tone. Let me hear it.
Do.
Oh, those were the days. Okay, now turn around. We're going to go on a little. Keep your eyes straight line and watch your spacing. Don't get too far apart. Everybody the same distance. That's it. Keep the candles up. Keep them way up high. Okay, Byron.
A stagehand opens the curtain. As Bob guides the children toward the stage, Betty sneaks up behind him and stuffs a present addressed to him in his sack. Now, Bob enters with Betty, Judy with Phil, who also wears a Santa suit. They flank a young ballerina who dances on point before a huge silver Christmas tree.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Betty and Judy wear flowing red satin gowns trimmed with white fur.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Four young ballerinas in red and white tutus and two boys in Santa suits form a tableau with the adults.
May your days be merry. And may all your Christmases be white.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
As the group spreads out, Bob finds Betty's gift and sneaks behind the Christmas tree to open it. Inside is a statue of a knight on a white horse. He pulls Betty over and kisses her. Now Judy arrives with Phil, who taps Bob on the shoulder.
Who's there? Santa Claus. Welcome to the family, Buster.
Look at this. Relatives already, huh?
Wallace and Davis are flat, you know. We've got to get some loot. We've got to take the show to Chicago or Boston.
No. I can't make it, huh? I'm going to be very busy.
Wait a minute. I'll join you.
Both couples kiss passionately. Now, the back wall of the set rises, revealing the snowy drive outside.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
I'm dreaming of a white
Bob and Phil gesture for the audience to join in. Everyone raises their champagne glasses to Waverly and sings. Then they stand and toast each other. Caption reads, The End. Now a logo, a Paramount picture. This program has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH, Boston. Described by Corey Couture and John Krinke. Narrated by Rena Baskin. Funding provided by the United States Department of Education.